I just want to say how excited I am for this podcast and also for you guys doing it. And anyway, I'm super pumped. I just wanted to leave you guys a voicemail of support and a cheering section from California, Northern California. What up, my lady?
It is March 1988. Your great uncle is bummed about Pontiac just retiring the Fiero. Prince Charles just had a close call with a Swiss avalanche. Oliver North is indicted in the Iran-Contra affair, but don't worry, he ends up just fine. And NASA reports on accelerated breakdown of something called the ozone layer. But you don't care too much about all that because Dennis and Second Period History has been giving you a look and you don't know what to make of it. So it's time to flip through the premier issue of this new magazine you just bought and see if it can help you out, which it can. Yes, it's time to
listen to Sassy.
Here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Pamela Ribbon.
Hey, Pam.
Hey, Tara. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
You know, hanging out, being sassy.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Before we get into this episode, let us talk a little bit about where each of us was in March of 1988. Pam, go first. Where was little Pam at this time in history?
Little Pam lived in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm 12, about to be 13 real, real soon. I go to a public school and I'm bused to a high school for science and English.
Because mm-hmm. you're gifted and talented. Yeah.
Because I'm gifted and talented. And that's how they did it at that school. They were like, I don't know, try ninth grade. Just do some ninth grade.
Yep. March of 1988, I'm like close to the end of my first year at a new school at the south end of Regina, hold for giggles from Pam, Saskatchewan. This is the more ritzy part of town. It's a hard time for little Tara. My parents did fine, but like designer clothes were not a big deal at my old school. And they were a very big deal at this school, like a real big deal. And it was a constant source of pain and anxiety for me because I was very covetous. And I'm attending Catholic school, which I always did. And that school was St. Pius the 10th, the very, very Catholic school.
You don't say.
Yeah. Where was little Dave, March 1988?
Little Dave was 2 months away from his driver's license.
Whoa.
So little Dave was taking his final lessons from his father. Lessons which I can only describe as fear-based and very sudden at that. My dad had a notion that the best way to prep me for sudden danger when driving, because driving is, you won't get killed by yourself.
Right.
You'll get killed by other people, mm-hmm. is what my dad used to say.
Yes.
Cheerfully.
Well, he was a police officer. He would know.
We would be driving, doing the lessons, going up and down country roads or whatever. And then he would slam the dashboard with his fist, which meant danger, danger now. And I had to brake and not lose control. And he hit the dash so many times and so hard that he cracked the dashboard in our car that we were test driving on.
Your dad so even tempered, or was, may he rest.
I was the first of my group of friends to have a driver's license and a car at high school. So I was a guy who got to drive everybody to good lunch places around. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of like for a good 9 months.
You were cool Dave.
Yeah.
You were cool Dave. First of all, we can't believe we let a cool boy in this podcast. It seems against the whole concept.
I was not cool Dave.
It didn't last.
I was very much not cool Dave. I was car Dave at best.
I forgot to say I was 13. I always think of myself as being much, much older than Pam, but we're like 5 months apart in age. It was just because we were in different grades, because my birthday's at the end of the previous year.
Right. But I said that I was in the seventh grade getting bused, but I guess I was in the sixth grade. So I was still in elementary school. I was at a time when at that, I think it's still this way in Jackson, but you went to public school and then at seventh grade, you either went to private or you were broke like us.
Right.
So a whole bunch of friends I was just never going to see them again because they were all about to go to Jackson Prep or Christian Academy.
Pam had to go work in the mines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down by the holla.
I have one more question for Dave.
Yes.
Actually, two. What do you know about Sassy? What did you know at the time that Sassy was publishing? And what have you gleaned about Sassy as a cultural force from my summer and fall of collecting it?
At the time, absolutely zero.
Okay. Which is surprising to me because you're a magazine junkie like me.
I mean, I'm sure I saw it on the shelves, but I would never have picked it up or opened it.
Right.
I was thinking, what would be the Dave equivalent of this podcast? Like a meaningful, influential magazine of my youth that shaped me into who I am. And there's no, like, I don't really think there's a true boy equivalent.
Right.
In the same sense that Sassy taught a lot of girls how to be modern women kind of way. Mm-hmm. But the magazine, though, I'd probably have to slot into that as the best equivalent would be like Starlog magazine, which is the sci-fi magazine of the 70s and 80s. And I gave it a little thought. My podcast is called Starlog Jam. Okay. But since then, I've only really discovered Sassy through you, actually, and how much you would mention it when we, you know, through the years.
Yeah.
And how influential it was. But yeah, beyond that, it didn't really hit my radar.
Well, this will be a journey for all of us.
I think it will be.
And as the issues kept coming, Dave kept saying, as there were more and more of them accumulated, kept asking, what are you going to do with them? And I was like, treasure them. And then the answer eventually became, once I had them all, this podcast. So let's get into it.
Let's start treasuring.
Oh, with the premiere issue, March 1988, our spine line is On Your Mark, Ellipsis. Sassy was a Perfect Bound magazine, not a Saddle Stitch magazine. So like Vanity Fair, not Entertainment Weekly, no Staples. So there was enough of a spine that you could write something on it. And each issue had a different line.
They were lovely non sequiturs often, though.
They were.
Now, am I remembering this correctly, that we actually got this issue in the mail like months before? Definitely nobody in my life picked up Sassy for me or that I had the means to have it. It came to my house, and I think it's because I had YM or 17.
That could be. They definitely bought the subscriber list for 17. That's how they got into it. 17 at the time was like the grand dame of teen magazines that had started publishing in the 40s, like after World War II. And so they were like the oldest. And I also have, and we'll talk about it later, the March 1988 issue of 17, which is like fully twice as thick as this issue of Sassy. Like they were very successful and well-established at this point.
And it felt to me like 17 felt like you were getting to read your mom's Cosmo. It was like Cosmo for you.
17 is very much like we're training you to be a wife.
Yes. A woman who holds a martini a certain way.
Right. I mean, maybe less so in the late 80s, but like when they write about Midge Turk Richardson, who was the editor of 17, she was literally a former nun. And by the time Sassy started publishing, she was like in her 60s. So she was like not with it, you know, the way that you would expect the editor of a teen magazine to be.
What was her name?
Yeah.
Midge Turk Richardson.
Okay, not Midge Turg.
No,
Midge. Which is a great name for a nun, frankly.
Midge, like what Mo thinks Marge Simpson's name is. Yeah. Midge Turk Richardson.
All right, well, that's disappointing.
Sorry.
If I was going to write a scene where you just cut to Tara winning a Trivial Pursuit game with those three words, I would just cut to, I'd be like, Tara's pretty good at games. She's a little competitive. And then it'd be her going, Midge Turk Richardson.
Oh, yeah. And not a personality that you would know at all from reading 17. Like she wasn't, you know, it wasn't the same kind of thing. As I said, we'll talk about it.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. I think of Brooke Shields whenever I think of 17 magazine.
They had their place in the cultural firmament as well. But Sassy was definitely going to come along and disrupt the teen mag space. So let us start talking about it. For each issue of Sassy, as we go forward, there will be three podcast episodes, and they will be broken out by subject matter. First, teen life, which is what we'll be talking about today. Second, pop culture. And third, fashion and magazininess. That is also where we will take your calls.
Okay, so we're going to talk about losing your virginity. That'll be page 58 in your hymnals if you're following along. In the contents, it says what you need to know before you decide. So it's assuming that perhaps we are virgins. I appreciate that. Sassy. Thank you. This is by Karen Catchpole. Your boyfriend says you should. Your mother says you shouldn't. Your friends say they already have. But what do you say? Before you do or say anything, read on and find out what you need to know about losing your virginity. Tara, was this scandalous to you to know that, like, oh my gosh, this magazine's going to talk to me about what it's like to lose my virginity?
Well, I had already read all of the Judy Blume books, like, when I was really, really young. So it was more the tone of it that was surprising, as opposed to, like, the actual data that was being communicated, shall we say.
Well, I had learned about sex from Stephen King novels.
Right.
So I really appreciated the tonal shift here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was less terrifying.
Those are basically the poles of the teen experience, right? Judy Blume and Stephen King. This is where you learn about sex. Somewhere in the middle is sexy.
Pammy and the Tommyknockers. Am I right?
Man, these Tommyknockers are real. And then some people would be like those VC Andrews people.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where you can always tell they had a different look in their eyes.
That's right. I had read those too. I forgot about that.
I have not.
This is a good article. And what's most surprising about it is that it's the first feature, because it's a very bold statement of intent. This is not the kind of thing that the other teen magazines were doing. I mean, they wrote about sex, but not like this.
No, it's usually more like either all the way to how should I do this one thing that I know he likes?
Uh-huh.
Or is it true you can get pregnant from thinking about sex?
Which, for the record, you can.
You definitely
right?
can. Yeah, I don't. The jury's still out, according to my mother.
Guys, if you could dream it, you can do it.
I was not allowed to read Judy Blume books. I had hide those. I had some Paula Danziger books. But when my mom found out the ending of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, she was horrified that they celebrate getting your period. She was like, what is this? What is this? And then she gave me Pet Sematary.
Now, Pam, as we record this, your mother is looking after your daughter right now. Is that correct?
Yes. This is a little true. I would say that my child is looking after my mother is really more accurate.
Fair enough.
My kid will sometimes text, Baba needs you to help her. She says she doesn't, but she's on a ladder. These are the texts I get. And also, this is crazy. I was trying to do the math because earlier Dave accidentally said 98 instead of 88 when talking about this month. And I was like, I keep doing that too because it doesn't make any sense anymore that there were the 80s and that it's that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, how old was my mom when this issue arrived? And I will say that she was a lot younger than I am right now.
What else is interesting about this article is that it has our first editorial interjection, which would become a hallmark of the magazine, where, you know, they're commenting on each other's pieces in the pieces, which became a thing that we did on Television Without Pity when we worked there. And I never put it together until many years later that was where I got it from, and Sarah got it from, too.
That wasn't deliberate?
No.
Well, I was going to get into it later, but I could talk about it now. The reason that I know you is because Christina Kelly, for a little while, was writing online about how to have a portfolio and how to try and, like, become a freelance writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I found Hissy Fit and pitched to you.
Yes.
And then you invited me into Mighty Big TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you wrote a little parenthetical, an editorial interjection, I was like, it has happened. I work for Sassy. I work at Sassy. Like, I did it. I don't know how. I went from reading how one person did it to doing it.
Aww.
It's great.
And look at you now.
Thank you. And look at me now. Back to the article.
So, like, I would say there is very good advice. Some of it is a little dated. I would say the conversation around enthusiastic consent is very different now. One quote I have in my notes is, if you're not completely comfortable with everything, then it's probably time to rethink what you're doing, which, like, only probably is not something you would see on Teen Vogue today, for instance.
Sure. But the communicating during sex doesn't necessarily mean talking. You can put your hand on his and show him what feels good. And if you do talk in bed, there's no rule that says it has to be about sex. Like all of that, I think, is like getting you comfortable with
absolutely
the concept that consent could be you going, do you want to play video games instead right now?
Right.
Because I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And they are very clear where it says it doesn't matter how far you go. You can always say stop.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be fine. He's not going to get a disease from having blue balls or whatever he might try and tell you.
Yeah. And I like that in the end, you know, they went all the way from this will be very important or it won't be. And
right.
It's going to be a thing because it's a thing,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah.
But the best thing to do is in any of these situations is to arm yourself with knowledge. And so that's what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to tell you like what you should do. There's no right way or wrong way.
Yep.
Which I liked.
Who didn't like it was a lot of parents and a lot of crazy right-wing groups, because this is also covered in the How Sassy Changed My Life book. There were huge boycotts as a result of this article, and the fallout continued to happen for years, where they had a number of sex articles prepped that continued to roll out over the first several issues. And then it was sort of like they were not permitted to write about sex for years, and advertisers pulled out. It was a whole thing. Like, a group initially called Women Aglow, like, teamed up with Focus on the Family, James Dobson's group, mm-hmm. And they just went completely apeshit on Sassy, trying to get it pulled from stores. And they did a bunch of different things to try to mollify them, including in the October 88 issue, like, printing a whole page of angry letters, like, hey, what do you think at the end of it? Like, if you like what we're doing, can you please write to our advertisers and tell them that we are not Satanists? Thank you. And yeah. Like in the next issue, having an article, it was like, virgins are cool. Please stop pulling your ads. And there's a lot of in the Sassy book that covers, you know, how they got through that time and how powerful people like the makeup artist Kevin O'Quinn, who has since passed away, might be Kevin O'Coin, basically went to CoverGirl, who we worked with, and was like, if you don't put your ads back in Sassy, I will not work for you anymore, which was a big deal. Like, this, yeah. This is the kind of thing that had to happen because these groups were so powerful. But this is what I mean when I say this is a bold, bold statement of intent. It was a big deal. And the fallout was a big deal, too, because it continued to affect them for years. Like, just ad pages continued to drop, and you can see them getting smaller and smaller, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, they talk about foreplay.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't trying to make anything cute about it,
mm-hmm.
or that it was like the equivalent of getting pinned or necking. There was no like heavy
yeah. pattern.
They didn't get cutesy with it. Like, listen up, gals.
And it's not like they use the medical terms. Like, they're not, you know, touch him down there. Like, they, you know, they
right.
say the words. Like, they don't go into yeah. a ton of detail, but in the way that you would expect to see in an article. And for contrast, we'll link in the show notes a very similar article from Teen Vogue from last year. Oh, the other thing that stood out was that there's no acknowledgement that a loss of virginity, or what the reader might consider to be a loss of virginity, might be something other than P and V sex, which you couldn't get away with not saying. Like, sex can be all kinds of things, which, you know, is true and was true mm-hmm. then, but, you know, was not how it was thought of in March of 1988.
Right. But they did have, you know, a section on AIDS and condom use, and
they did.
That's pretty forward thinking, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you had a question in your notes. Did this article change how you thought about losing your virginity? As I said, from the Judy Blum books, I was pretty sure I knew how I felt about it. But the pregnancy fears, I feel like it's circled back around to where they're like, yes, you can get pregnant the very first time, to where now, because I watched the Teen Mom franchise, I think education has like lost a step, where sometimes if it's not very clearly spelled out, girls think if they have unprotected sex and they don't get pregnant the first time, they think they're sterile. Because I've heard more than one girl on Teen Mom say that they thought they were and then they got pregnant. Are they dumb? Yes. But also, they might have just gotten bad or unclear information. Just
saying. It's the problem with abstinence-only education.
Right.
I'm glad that Sassy kept at it.
mm-hmm.
Did it like change my fears of about losing my virginity? I would say I was just always afraid of losing my virginity. Learning that the condom can rip and all of those things, that is not the stuff that you learn about reading your dad's penthouse forums.
No, that's true.
They don't mention it.
They probably don't talk about condoms at all, I'm guessing.
No, it was all kind of new for me. I learned about sex in a roundabout way. I basically started like a horny old dude and then learned.
Well, Stephen King.
Yeah, like sex was weird from everything I read. I didn't get it.
Reading Stephen King, big stogie in her mouth.
You guys, I know I've told this story before, but maybe not to you two. But in that Pet Cemetery, there's a hand job in a bathtub. And
right.
He says to her, "Where did you learn that?" And she says, "Girl Scouts." And so I went and got my Girl Scouts handbook and tried to figure out what badge that is.
Starting a fire.
Oh, boy. Yes.
Ew. Yep, I think that's the end of this segment.
Yeah. All right, feature number two, backstage at Miss USA's, pretty much what you think it is. They sent Katherine Guisen undercover to a beauty pageant. It's the first but not last piece on beauty pageants, which is funny in that I feel like beauty pageants have just completely faded from culture. They're just like not a thing. I mean, I guess they still exist, but it's just not a thing that you ever hear anyone like talk about or think about it.
Anybody that would willingly do a beauty pageant, not be like pushed into it by their parents. So like, right. You know, of age.
Yeah.
I think are going for the like Instagram influencer.
Right. Path right. That's now. Their path now. Yeah. That's a good point. So she's at Miss South Carolina. And so, yes, Miss USA was the pageant that Donald Trump owned. He did not own it at this point in history. He acquired it in 1996 and owned it until 2015. So his taint is not on it at
Gross.
This time in the story. Well,
phrasing.
Wow.
It's considered newsworthy that only some of the contestants remove their pubes. This was one of the moments where it's like, oh, wow, we really have changed in terms of grooming. Like, at this point, I assume all beauty pageant contestants are pube-free completely. But there's also, like, considering this is the first issue of the magazine, like, there's so many references in it to direction she got from Jane on, like, how to write it, how much she wanted to please Jane, inside jokes with Jane about doing it. Like, it starts so early how much they want you to feel like this is a cool club that you're hanging out in.
She's still trying to figure out, like, am I here to make fun of it or not? And
yeah.
I don't want to, but I do. But it seems like that's what, like, everybody's so, I'm kind of Daria. You know,
yes.
Like,
yes.
This is the beginning of, like, I'm Jeanine Garofalo and I'm in a place, but I don't want to be shitty. I do remember that this is what taught me you could put Vaseline on your teeth to make them shiny.
That's right.
This article. It's not great, but I did it.
So she lists a whole bunch of contestants' real full names. I did Google them to see if any of them were QAnon now, but I didn't find any of them. April Abel, who is the winner of Miss South Carolina. She went on to be a semifinalist at Miss USA that year, which was held in El Paso, Pam, FYI.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really find anything on the rest of them if they even kept their names, which I assume if they got married, they definitely did not. There is a video on YouTube of her getting interviewed by the host of the pageant that year, Alan Thicke.
Oh.
RIP, we miss him. As Pam said, like, Catherine isn't wrong that pageants are silly and sexist, but an article now, I feel like, would come at it from a different angle that was not so expected, where it would just be, like, trying to understand the institution and the women in it rather than just acting superior to it, and definitely would not have her be embedded undercover. Because that feels kind of unethical to me.
It's almost like she's just recording what she heard, like a fly on the wall, but not really asking anybody,
why are you doing this?
Right. It's almost, yes. Or what makes you feel good about this? Like, it's almost like she's like, and she's putting tape on her breasts. You know,
right. Yeah. There's just like, there's no acknowledgement that, like, there's a reason to do this. And it's like, you get a lot of money. And you become famous, and if you're pretty, this is a fairly easy way to do it. I don't know. I just felt like it was, you know, it was very of its time and very of its moment, too. And it's exactly what you would expect the sassy take to be, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, it's not how this would be written about now.
It's not very feminist. We were listening, Baby Got Back was on, and my kid was like, is this song mean to some girls? And I was like, it is. It is. I hadn't really heard it that way before. Yeah. And so that's what I heard when I was reading this. Like, this article's mean to some girls, even the accent, the cadets.
Mm-hmm. It's also mean to me because I don't have a big butt.
Oh. Yeah, where's your section? Where's your anthem? Our third feature, that's how I'm going to say it. Fuck you, Dave. Our third feature, feature number three, how to flirt, which was kind of written as a group. They're all giving their advice on how to flirt. How to flirt is all like peppy poppy with their fonts. It was a typical Wednesday morning. This is so sassy to me where they're like, you're just hanging out with us. Here's what's up. Here's what happens. It's like a note in class is getting passed to you about flirting to like get you in the mood. It was a typical Wednesday morning. Elizabeth and Catherine were having their usual argument over who's better looking, Dweezil Zappa or Sting. Karen was cramming her second blueberry muffin into her mouth. And Jane had that I've got a brilliant idea look on her face. Why don't we do a story on how we flirt? And what's funny is they just like kick it off with Neil, which I suppose is like the sassy version of mansplaining where he was just like, I'll tell you.
Right. Everything about this is like so meant to look casual, but it's clearly so calculated, starting with that intro where it's like, here's what these people are like when we are in an editorial meeting on a Wednesday. Right. But also, here's Neil. He's the guy you're going to imprint on as the one you think is the cute flirt guy.
Yeah. He's the dude that we let in to talk when we're talking. He's like a cool dude. Yeah.
Right. He's your formative Australian crush object.
Right. They all maybe didn't date him, but maybe some have, but they've all kind of sworn to not talk about it.
Right.
And that's so it's always just like, you know, Neil, you're so incorrigible. Like, you and I both flagged that he says women are attractive things. And we're like, ooh. Ew.
Yeah. Gross.
But back then, I don't know. That was what you would hear people. I mean, this is not, I can imagine John Cusack in a character saying that, or
for sure.
Robert Downey Jr. for sure. And we would
for
be like,
sure,
I want to be that attractive thing. Put me on your wall. Am I a tie? Am I a car? But then, you know, then they call him a sleazebag too. Like the, so it is that you can talk to boys and you can joke with boys and you can throw it back at them. If they're going to talk to you this way, you can talk to them that way. And I think Sassy really put that in a place that was different than other magazines, which was like, let the boy find you. Be
right.
Perfect.
Be yes.
Pretty, not too pretty. Don't be too smart. Don't math. Don't math right at the boy. For God's sake, don't science. So this was great. This was like, I don't know, if you want to flirt with a boy, they really run the thing from like flirting is not flirting to flirting is touching. You know, like find it, which this definitely was a problem. I apologize to all the boys I've touched before. You know, where you just like find a reason to like touch him. And I was not good at like touch him on the arm. I'd be like, look at your stomach. Like, no, like just terrible. So awkward. So bad. They weren't very specific on how to touch him. So I was also like, I've fallen, you know, like, why? Because I was clumsy. Like, I really was falling. But like, I was not a cool toucher. I was probably still not a cool toucher.
Look at your stomach.
We're lucky we're on Zoom, Dave. Yes, because they'd skate, and you know, you'd be like, oh, you know, and then underwear was always kind of peeking out in some way.
What I was, you know, envisioning is like the way in movies blind people touch people's faces, where you're like, you're real pretty.
I learned touching from Mask. I would put cotton balls on their faces and I'd say, these are clouds. These are clouds.
Pam, let me get to know the real you.
It's the ultimate touching scene. Laura Dern and Eric Stoltz learning what colors. Oh,
Oh, God. Oh,
you guys, that's a really good scene. That is Pam flirting. Oh, someone did that to me.
Do they in the article suggest that when you flirt, you just start with, I am now going to flirt with you so that the other person knows that this is flirting, you just not being weird, which was always my interpretation of
Robo
flirting.
Puppy commence flirting.
Exactly. Like a card, present a card.
Hello, I am flirting.
I'm going to flirt.
I think my face is that card. like I it's flirty fan face. I'm just right. Like, hi. Hey. Well, they do that. Neil says that basically because he's like, just be silly, like make a dumb face. Where flirting is acting too cool for school or whatever. Mm-hmm. Jane's talking about how she learned to like lean against a pinball machine and like tuck her pinky in her mouth and to kind of look curious.
Mm-hmm. And she admits that like she caught a glimpse of herself making that face and realized how dumb it was. But then she was like, it does work, though.
Which, it really does,
you know,
work.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing around a pool table.
Mm-hmm.
But I like you go a step further and you also know how to play the video game. You wait until they think, oh, I'll teach you.
Right.
Then you boom, boom, you win.
At this time, I was in marching band. This is another thing that you might both want to laugh at, perhaps. Oh, no one is. I see.
Oh, you didn't. First of all, you didn't say what you played or anything. What's band's fine. I have plenty of band friends.
That year, I played flute. The next year, I also learned how to play like keyboards, like xylophone and bells and stuff.
A flautist to the percussion.
I'll talk about that when we get to the fall. That was a big difference because it meant I was in the pit and then I didn't have to learn any of the routines. That was the lazy. Mm. That's the lazy person's yeah. version
that is
of
the
marching
goalie
band.
Of marching band.
It is. It totally is. Anyway, so I was like, I was friends with a bunch of other band boys, and it was like very boisterous and like, you know, sarcastic. It was a very joshing relationship, but my flirting style was to take it too far and be too mean. Then I would hurt their feelings. They didn't like
it
me.
Does
this scan,
it still,
perhaps?
I think it might still be, Tara.
Yeah. Maybe.
Does that scan, perhaps? You, Claude.
Shut up. Yeah.
Does this sound familiar to anyone in this conversation?
Oh, my gosh.
I would flirt by walking up to somebody and then quickly running away.
Yeah, that sounds right.
What do you mean? You'd run up to them.
Chicken out and run away.
Did they know you had run up or were you behind them and then turn around and hightail?
I just pussed out is what I'm saying.
Well, you would have enjoyed Bucci Tag, which was a game that was invented in sixth grade that the boys invented, my friend Douglas invented, and I only learned much later was an invention to flirt. It didn't feel like flirting at the time. So there was a TV show called Perfect Strangers, and they played a game called Bucci Tag. And if you were holding the little stuffed sheep, you had the Bucci, you were safe. You were safe. So in between classes, all of a sudden, boys would run, and then they'd chase each other, and I'd get grabbed. And then someone would go, Bucci, 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 Bucci. And it meant that they were on base. And then, like, they would just decide which girl was the Bucci that recess.
Oh.
It was often me. And much, much later, I learned it was, quote, so we could touch girls.
Right.
But at the time, it did not feel like I'm hanging out with my blueberry muffin and the Jane in the sassy right. offices talking about flirting. But, Dave, you would have been really good at Bucci Tag.
I was pretty fat.
Now, we were body positive.
Guys, wait up. Stop.
All kinds of Buccis. No, because the girls would stop. You stop when you're the Bucci. The only way to get it to stop is to not be a moving base and to just stand there and go, y'all, you guys, stop. I'm going to be late. That was it. Bucci Tag.
Wow.
And you just want to dance one song, and some boy's like, oh, okay, yes, I'll dance with you. And then while he gets on the dance floor and puts his arms around you, he then shouts over your shoulder, Bucci, 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 and he's only dancing with you because you're the fucking Bucci.
I don't quite understand Bucci ball, but I'm just going to go with
Bucci
it.
Tag,
it's Bucci tag.
It's
Bucci tag. And you know what? I'll find a clip because I'm sure there's a clip.
There has to be.
Okay.
That sounds traumatic.
Only in hindsight and knowing that, like, it was actually their attempt to, like, be sweet around girls, has it
right.
become less traumatic? But at the time, yeah, it was embarrassing. You're just like, I'm a woman. I'm a 12-year-old woman, yeah. not a stuffed sheep named, you know, named Demetrix. Feature Forest, Talk Behind Your Back by Christina Kelly begins, oh my God, you're not serious. Can you believe it? How could she? It's true. I saw her. Talk behind your back. And there's a picture of a girl and she looks really sad. And there are people behind her judging.
So the premise is how to deal with it when your friends are talking behind your back, basically. Various strategies or different scenarios where you know that this is happening. Why might it be happening? How you can deal with it, how to address it, how to confront it, etc. And I definitely can see how this got Christina Kelly the job. But as an editor, sometimes it could use some editing. This intro is it's so long. It takes so long to get to the point. It's like four paragraphs of setup of like, imagine this is you in high school. First this happens and then this happens and then they're talking blah, blah, blah. Like we get it.
It's very me. Like it's exactly, I still probably picture it. Like, dig, if you will, the picture. We're alone in the cafeteria. I think it's interesting because it puts you in the place of knowing how it feels to be gossiped about. But then it flips it and says, well, let's look at who's gossiping. Because probably they've got their own whole, dig, if you will, the picture going on, too. Yeah, you're like, cut 600 words, though.
She needs to cut at least 200 words, I would say, from that intro. It's like the headline and the lead set it up very well. I just think she's being a little self-indulgent in getting to the point. And as I was reading those anecdotes, I was like, and especially after I found out that this was her spec story, I was like, oh, these are all made up stories. Like these are not, she did not talk to real people. But then two of them are called Nicole. Like, and then she's like, Nicole, not the same Nicole I talked about earlier. It's like, okay, these are clearly not real people. So first of all, like, if they are, change names. And if they're not, definitely change names.
Oh, no, that's her strategy. See, it's it's like when you tell a lie, you have to tell three lies.
I guess.
Absolutely. And you sound like a young girl when you're like, not Nicole, but like other Nicole, like tall Nicole.
Not Nicole H, Nicole T.
Yeah, Nicole T.
So, you know, it's fine. I think there is definitely some good advice in here. And this is absolutely the kind of thing where it's like, if you are a teenager, this is one of your top seven greatest anxieties. And especially in girl world, too. Why am I on the outs with my group of friends this particular week? I mean, even if you know consciously or that everything is probably going to be fine and it'll be someone else ostracized next week, like, this is a bad situation to be in, and it happens to everyone and it fucking sucks. So I think there is good advice in here about how to just confront it and try to deal with it rather than suffer and be sad.
I didn't have a lot of girlfriends at this time, though. Was probably the last time in my life that I had like a group of girls where we all hung out all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of because I moved a lot. So this, and I was going to move again pretty soon, spoiler alert, but I hadn't really had a lot of experiences of suddenly your girlfriends are hanging out and talking about you, but not like for any other reason other than they literally have nothing else to talk about. So they decided to just talk about you.
Yep.
And I appreciate that the article is like, some of these girls just got like nothing.
Yeah. And no, it's true.
Yeah, like it's kind of sad. Like it's sad. I really appreciated that Sassy always sort of was like, because you're awesome was the answer all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. That's often the case though. Like,
yeah, but you don't believe it at this
age. No, you don't.
You're just like, I'm the worst. And a lot of the other things are like, is it because you need this? Is it because you need this makeup? Is it because you need these pants? Is it because you smell?
Yeah. Yeah. If you get to the point where you even can talk to your parents, they're like, who cares? And you're like, this is all I have to care about.
I care. Yes. Like, this is my whole world.
Yeah.
Yes. Feature number five is Life After Suicide. So this one's not going to be as funny.
I mean,
wrong so far.
That setup was,
but also, you know, appropriate trigger warnings and such. But this is an article that takes it from, much like the gossip column, from the other side. What happens after someone is gone, and what is it like for the people that are still here? This is a Katherine Geisen article. Interviews and case by case people. Some are friends and some are parents. But this, I guess, also was like talking about things that you think about that no one talks to you about. Or it's very binary. It's just like, don't.
Right.
And not into the nuances of because.
Yeah, it's very sad. Again, my editor's eye, I would probably cut her talking so much about how this reporting this story about dead teenagers affected her. Is maybe a bit tone deaf, you know, like you're not the story. But I think after that, it just transitions to like letting the survivors of these deaths tell their own stories in a very straightforward way. And I think that's like nice and understated, and, you know, it's hard to read, of course, but I think that's a very modern way to tell those stories.
Even what you're talking about, I've heard talking about how much this kind of changed how she felt. It reminds me of like true crime podcasts and stuff of, oh, you really can't tell the story anymore because you've become a part of the story and these stories affect you. It didn't glamorize any of it.
Yeah.
And I think this was during a time when suicide in particular was a bit of like a princessy, glamoury, mystery girl thing to do. To be very sick or to be very hurt, maybe not all the way to suicide, but be troubled and mysterious. Talking about it in a way where it actually is devastating and there's no glamour in it at all, I thought was a nice thing to do. You know, that's sort of where I felt like her point of view was coming from, because you're not really going to get that from the interviews.
Right. It was also interesting to me how she describes, you know, how much a change of personal style in a teenager is or can be a signal of extreme emotional turmoil. So they talk about one of the kids who dies by suicide, Alexa, before she passes, has a big makeover. And they say like she started dressing more like a mod, or, you know, you think of that, or just changing your room. And like, again, sort of like, we'll just make new friends or just don't worry about it or whatever. Like these are the only things that someone who is 14 or 15 or whatever can control. And so it's just interesting that, you know, when they're talking about it later that, oh, I should have known that meant something, you know, or it could have meant something, or I should have asked. And I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Or the boy who had a completely different haircut and started just seeming like he was trying out a new side of him.
Yeah.
And they didn't know he was headed to anything like this. I mean, you can read that differently now of that might not have been depression. Becoming who he was might have ended up, you know, being, you know, having some trauma like that. You can tell, and this is before people really are talking to each other about trauma in the way that we luckily feel a little freer to do now. Not that it's easy or ever easy, but at least we have more words to approach each other with than back here, where it's like she started dressing like a mod.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Heavy. And it also ends with its own, you know, if you know someone thinking about it or you need to talk to someone, here's, every town has a hotline number, which again, it's always arming people with information. And that's also, I think, pretty true to Sassy, was that the whole thing, it was not fluffy and it really took people seriously. It talked to you like you were to be a person, a full person. That's another reason why people get passionate about it, because it was like a whole night hanging out with someone and the giggle fits. And the confessions.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Well, before we move on to our other departments, I just wanted to, for contrast, report on the non-pop culture features from 17 of March 1988, the very same month that this issue came out. So we have a supposed diary of going to spring break that seems completely fake. I looked up the credited author. Her name is Barbara Stepko. She's still a freelance writer. And based on the topics she's covering right now and the outlets that she's writing for, like AARP.org, I'm going to say she's quite a lot older than we are. So I don't think she went to spring break in 1988, but maybe. There's a Servicey article on how to pay for college. Would you believe Some schools cost $16,000 a year or more. A piece on whether you should date your friend's ex, which I have not reread, but which is definitely subject matter Sassy would cover and probably did cover. I'm sure we will get to something like that. An article about AIDS that seems positioned to terrify readers into abstinence. Mm-hmm. Literally an article about redheads. It's just like, hey, redheads, like not a fashion story. Just what are redheads like through famous
They're
redheads
just like
in
us.
History? Exactly. Followed by a profile on Tiffany, which does not seem like a coincidence. Mm. And then a crowdsourced article on where readers would go if they had a time machine. And that was it. Like, so point being,
the question is when they would go.
You're right. What you need to, my point is.
Well, but hang on. Really, when you create a time machine, you have to create a time and travel machine. Otherwise, your time machine is just going to stay in the same place in different parts of time.
Right.
So if you want to like go back 500 years to Europe, well, you're going to have to go back 500 years and build a boat.
Right.
Or transfer your time machine over to Prague, then go back in time.
Right.
I'm just saying there's a lot of time travel logistics I think people don't think about when they talk about time travel machines.
Have you ever thought about writing Starlog a Jam. Graphic novel? Like this? The podcast within the podcast. Thank you.
That's what it is. Thank you.
We'll get next episode of Starlog Jam.
Bonus content. 5 minutes Starlog Jam.
You should take that time travel concept and turn it into a graphic novel of like a man who invents, it's just a good idea, a man who invents a time machine but forgets to put the where in it. Yeah. It's just the when. And it's just every time the door opens, when is he now? Oh, now it's a department store.
We're back at breakfast. I burnt the toast. That's how I remember.
Yeah. I would read it.
My point was,
sorry. Sometimes I co-host our side podcast.
You don't need to apologize. What you need to know before losing your virginity and teen suicide are huge swings compared to what the biggest and oldest teen magazine was doing at the same time. And they feel like very intentional choices for the premiere issue. And also, I've only flipped through this 17 a little, but we need to come back to this one and spend more time with it in some way, like maybe if we have a Patreon eventually, because I definitely had this one at the time and I looked at it a lot. And when I got to the fashion stories, I was like, oh, yeah, this is all coming back to me now. Because I was, as I said earlier, huge magazine junkie, spent my whole allowance on magazines, loved magazines, bought them all. And when this one came, I was like, oh, damn. Yes, I remember having this one.
This is the fourth time in a week that Tiffany has been mentioned. And I just wonder if Tiffany knows that she's one of those people that just happens. The Tiffany effect where you're just like, oh, my gosh, I heard it once. And now my workout had one of her songs. Yesterday. And then the day before someone was like, what is this song? And blah, blah, blah. And it was a Tiffany song. And what is happening? Tiffany effect.
Well, she'll be in the next issue of Sassy. There's a rather infamous profile about her in the April 1988 issue. So.
Is that true? It's happening again right now?
Yes.
What's going on, man? What's it all mean, Star Lab?
Starlog.
Starlog Jam. If you're going to be part of the Starlog Jam side podcast, you got to get the title right.
No, Star I think it's the official girl. I'm supposed to say it wrong every time.
Right.
That's how I flirt. Is that your stomach?
Affirmative.
Oh, yeah.
So that's it for our features. Moving on. The fiction story this month is called My Name is Daniel. The author is Christopher Newbaum. The story of the titular Daniel, who does not get cast in his school play, but he takes a job on the crew, has a crush on a girl in the show, and, you know, things don't really go so well for him. He thinks he's got a shot with her because she's got a big nose, but then it turns out, not so much. Also, the play they're doing in the story is Our Town, which is like the most cliched choice possible, I think. It's like really a first thought decision to make it our town.
I have to confess, I did not realize this was fiction. And the whole time I was like, no, because where does it say that? It doesn't anywhere say fiction. And so it doesn't even occur to me that it's called My Name is Daniel by Christopher Newbound, because everybody gets his name wrong in the article.
Right.
So I was just like, these are lies. None of this happened. This is boring. And I don't like this article. And I was like, it's all fake. But now knowing it's fiction, I stand by my assessment.
Next, we have On the Road. This is the recurring feature where they go to a different city and get kids who live there to say, what's the slang? What are the cool places to hang out? What do they wear? Etc. And this month, they are in Miami, a place I've never been. Pam, have you ever been to Miami?
I've never been to Miami. Isn't that funny? I've never been to Miami.
Seems like you would have. I am surprised to hear that, actually.
Well, when we have a TWAP summit to celebrate our retirement and our pensions.
So one of the things they're celebrating is the opening of a mall, an outdoor mall called Bayside Marketplace, which is still open, although in 1988 it had 174 stores. And now, according to Google, it's down to 120. Tough times for Bayside Marketplace. In the article, they refer to Bobos as modified keds. But I looked that up because I'd never heard of it. And according to Urban Dictionary, that is not the case. Bobos are just a generic term for like knockoffs. So,
but isn't it a term you use for all like the these things are pretty Bobo? Like Jason says that. My husband says that.
I'd never heard that before. This was new to me. But, you know, good for the kids they talk to for proudly repping non-name brand looks. And one of the shots is of a person in like white pants that are all covered all over black text print, which I would still wear. I thought they were pretty cool.
The online slang dictionary says it's from the Spanish word bobo, meaning foolish or fool, crazy, stupid, silly, or weird. So, yeah, you're just like, they're jank. You know, they're not quite. They're fake kids. They're kafu kids.
This is the thing I learned this week. Bobos. Yeah.
You guys left out the most important part of On the Road.
Which is?
Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami, is just finished filming on Miami Beach.
Just finished filming.
It was so important they had to stick it vertically.
Yes.
Up in the gutter.
But that's a real sassy thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, fun fact, some sideways shit. In the What They Say, which was like where you really would learn some slang, speaking of Bobo, which is that's where this should be. But it had bitchin'. Scandal. Scandal. That's my Bridgerton voice. It says bitchin'. Fresh, deaf, so cool, gnarly, and bitchin'. It's good slang. It holds up. Do you say fresh, Tara? Because I want to hear it.
No, I don't. I mean, other than in its, you know, its standard usage, not the slang usage.
Do you
not
mean,
funky fresh.
Is the arugula fresh?
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh, that chick said fresh. We're going to talk about page 118 now. This is What He Said, a recurring article where they ask boys a question, and this month's question is, why did you break up with your girlfriend? And I just wrote on the notes, parade of dicks. This parade of dicks. This is just a parade of dicks, not a nice man. And then Keith Coogan, and I was like, also seems like a dick. That nobody's coming off well.
No.
In this answer. Tom, 18, not his real name, says it was like nobody. It's Tom, Greg, Sean, and Keith. Come on.
Sure it is.
It was simply that I met someone I was more compatible with who later confided he lied, and I just didn't want to say that I just blew her off. Dick number one. Dick number two, Sean. I went out with this girl for 4 months. He's a lacrosse player from New Jersey. No, he's not. She always wanted to go out, just me and her alone, so she would just be content to stay home and hang out. But I'd rather go out and party with my friends than go out with a girl alone because it's boring. So I decided to sacrifice the relationship. Greg, 19, she wanted too much of a time commitment. Same thing.
Yeah.
He's a Manhattan native and self-described stud. There wasn't enough space in the relationship. When you sacrifice time with your friends, it becomes uncool. I will say, this was another one where I was like, all of this is made up. this was just to get the style down, to get the tone of like how we're going to talk about dudes.
Yes.
And a self-described stud. Like it's fine with me. And also, did Keith Coogan write any of this? No, maybe not.
No. But I mean, if you were making it up, if you asked 10 guys, probably 4 of them would say, I dumped my girlfriend because she was too clingy. If they were teenagers, like, are they dicks? 100%. Do I buy it? Yes.
Sure. You have a point. Sometimes we're too clingy.
I'm not saying that's an okay reason. I'm saying that that's something that guys would say.
Yeah. I'll try not to take everything personally in the what he said column. I don't know how I'll do, but we'll try. I'll keep trying. Let's see what happens next month.
Speaking as someone who got dumped by someone in this room for being too clingy, that's how I know.
Well, you guys have really stayed together, broken up amicably, impressively. Yeah. I am impressed. I'm impressed. Dave, why did you break up with your girlfriend, Tara?
She called me a clod.
So help is what you think it is. It's people writing in asking for some help. And in this issue, again, not sure any of this is real. Really feel like these are some not real things, which is why I take a lot of issue.
Yeah.
With what they led with. I'm just going to read it. Kissing Mom is the name of the... There you go. You have it. Spoiler alert. I'm 13, and recently I invited my boyfriend over for a swim. He arrived early, and I was cleaning my brother's room, which has a good view of our pool. I saw him jump into the pool, and when my mom came up, he started kissing her. She enjoyed it and carried on. They didn't know I was watching them, and neither of them have mentioned that day. I can't even look at my mom anymore. I'm angry and confused. Please help, Rochelle.
Pam, put down the penthouse forum and get back to Sassy, please.
Yeah, first of all, this is, yes, like, this is a Stephen King, this is a Chuck Palahniuk story. But the thing is, and so they are like, I'm just turning into a Fred Armisen character. But essentially, because of my level of outrage, because they said, this one really baffled us, so we called a therapist. She said, the important thing to remember is you haven't done anything wrong. Sure.
True.
Ask your mother to explain what happened. What? Right now, you're probably saying, are you serious? Yes, we are. You've still got to live with your mother. No, you don't. And hearing her side of what happened may clear the air and make you feel better. We know it's not going to be easy to approach her, but she certainly owes you an explanation. Whew. You may not be satisfied her with response, but at least you tried. No mention of the boy. I'm apoplectic. As you can hear.
Really, I mean, she said, I'm 13, right? That was the age?
Yep.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hope you're not dating an 18-year-old boy.
I think you guys buried the lead. Why is she cleaning her brother's room?
I just want to call out. Pam was like, how old is this boy that's kissing a mom? And in my notes and Dave's reaction, why were you cleaning your brother's room?
That was really where I got hung up. And the rest of it's like, yeah, you know, kiss who you want to kiss.
Stacey's mom got it.
Cougarific. Go for it.
I flat out assumed, just let's take a little trip through little Pam's head. She had to clean her brother's room before she could go swimming. That was just, I assumed. And then also, she was conveniently cleaning her brother's room because it has a good view of the pool. Uh-huh. So she wanted to watch the boy swim.
What, like there's trash piled up halfway to the window? Couldn't get a good view? Like,
you would say, I had to clean my brother's room when someone is like, what the fuck were you doing up there looking out the window at the pool anyway? And you're like, I was just cleaning Pete's room. And it just happened to be a view of the pool. And all of a sudden, she's in trouble when mom is kissing a 13-year-old to 16-year-old boy, right, who seems like perhaps he initiated. I'm confused.
Yeah.
Well, insofar that everything is made up here, that is sure. Just another thing to make up. But that is a
totally
it's a weird detail.
A very weird detail.
So Bridgerton says. Yeah.
Like, it would be like, there I was playing bridge. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. It also, anyway, yes. So we'll move on because Rochelle's not a real person. If this ever happens to you or you know someone, like, this is fucked up and you should get some help, like get help from other people.
Also, the solution is make your boyfriend wear mask and a snorkel in the pool. So when he gets out, there's nothing to kiss.
Yeah.
Solve your problem with equipment.
No, that's like making her wear a chastity belt. You don't have to body shame the boy. He should be allowed to swim without having to. What was he wearing? Really, Dave? Come on. cut all that out. Okay. Family versus friends. I'm 15 years old, and it seems my mother never went through her teenage years. She doesn't understand me at all. When my friends come over, she tells them how disobedient and bad I am and that I should learn from them. It embarrasses not only me, but my friends as well. I can't talk to mom about it as she gets furious and starts screaming, what should I do, Alice? And the advice is, moms be tripping. And sometimes they don't know what to say. So maybe she was trying to be cool, Amy Poehler mom next to you.
Right.
Doesn't know that like teasing you hurts your feelings. So talk to her about it.
Yeah. In my notes, I have your mom is at worst emotionally abusive and at best just kind of a bitch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'd be like, go hang out at not your house.
Right. What if when you invited your friends over, you made them all wear masks and snorkels?
Can't be your solution to every problem.
It's gonna be.
And B, it should be the mom wearing a mask and snorkel so that she can't be with the zingers all the time.
Dear Sassy, I'm often going about my business in the middle of the day when a shark that I didn't see bites me. How can I solve this very interesting and troubling problem? Well, my friend, the solution would be to wear a mask and a snorkel. You'll see that shark coming.
The promo for your podcast, Sparts Lab, is just you 16 times in snorkels.
Sparks Lab.
Smirkles. The place to go to snork it up.
Starring David T. Cole and Midgerton.
Speaking of older guy, I've liked a guy for 2.5 years who's a year older than I am. He knows who I am and he knows that I like him, but still we don't talk. I know where he lives and what most of his interests are, but I just can't bring myself to talk to him. I'm 15 and I guess I'm just scared of rejection. Please help. Melanie with 2 E's. And they were like, I don't know, man. It sounds like you just need to go talk to him.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she flips it. They flip it and say, you don't even know if he's that great. You don't know him yet. So just go talk to the dude.
It's good advice.
Our next advice is about vaginal discharge.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just says, yes, you're normal.
It's the third way to get kicked out of the army.
Wow. Get it together. You got to admit a quiz later.
Yeah, Dave. Well, and then the next one's about weird breasts.
Yeah.
Pause for Dave.
I would just like to back up to the vagina one, which is they say it's going to stop when you start menstruating. And I would just like to add, don't lie to girls that a weird thing your vagina is doing will stop when you start menstruating, because it's not. Vaginas are weird and they will continue to be weird forever.
Right. And just keep talking to your doctor about it, which is, and then the next one where she's like, my boobs do this. She's like, sometimes that's okay, but like, go to a doctor. Like, yeah, that was good advice. And then I have issues with separated sisters.
Yeah.
My mom won't let me see my 16-year-old sister because some time ago she was in trouble with the police. My sister left home when she was 11. I see and talk to her behind my mom's back, but my mom always finds out. She thinks that my sister will get me into trouble. I am 14. How can I make my mom understand that I love my sister? Please help. Desperately hurt. And they're like, just go see her then.
What does it mean that your sister left home when she was 11? Was she in juvie? Does she live with someone else? Is she on the streets? Like, I need more information. So, again, a weird way to put it in this probably fake letter.
Yeah, there's no mention of a dad. And so maybe she's living with some other family member kind of way. But it really just sounds like she took off and lived elsewhere and then was like, I'm not coming back.
Right.
And that she and her mom, I mean, maybe there's substance abuse issues going on. I mean, when you're not allowed to see your older sister who's not even 15 or 16, like, you know, that sounds like someone's trying to shelter someone from addict behavior.
That's a good point.
which is why I was not like, I was like, this advice to say, like, she's your sister, you should just get to do what you want. And you're like, they're both minors and they're both little, they're both young, and mom's just trying to like keep it together.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a, like, there was an agreement of like, convince someone outside the family, like an adult who knows your sister, who can assure your mother that she won't lead you astray. Like, again, like, but at least it's like saying, keep bringing it up. You don't have to sneak around and see her.
Yeah.
Put it on the level, because she's going to be safer with people knowing where she is and why she's doing it.
And that's the help column.
That's the help column.
Mixed bag.
Is that your stomach?
Next time on the podcast, it's our pop culture episode, digging into the pop culture of the March 1988 issue, including stars who are still relevant, like Tom Cruise, Robert Downey Jr., and the Beastie Boys. Stars we don't see so much anymore, like Justine Bateman, Mackenzie Astin, and Dweezil Zappa. Reviews of R.E.M. and Moonstruck, and would you believe even more Keith Coogan?
It's true.
For plugs, I wrote an essay for the New York Times Magazine about collecting Sassy Magazine, and we will link it in the show notes. It was a real honor to do. Pam, what would you like to plug?
If you're super into too much me, around this time, I have a book called Notes to Boys and Other Things I Shouldn't Share in Public that you can pick up. I wrote a lot of notes to boys, and I kept all the first drafts. Because I'm weird, and because I'm Bobo, and and this is a book wherein I publish them. It also has some of my essays at that time and what it was like to be living in a small Texas town that had a lot of racism. So it's funny, but also not, and I'm currently adapting it for FX. So I'm really living out my life right now in the past. I'm deep in it. Okay, and if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are Tara Ariano. That is T-A-R-A-A-R-I-A-N-O. So many R's and A's.
I know.
And I am Pamela Ribbon with one B. We are also at Listen to Sassy. We're also on Instagram under those names. Please rate and review our podcast. Listen and subscribe, you guys. This is my first podcast. I've never gotten to say that before.
You nailed it.
Questions, comments, sassy stories of your own, please call the Listen to Sassy hotline. That is at 720-SASSY. Go call our hotline and we may use your message in a future episode.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
We're really going to do this for 80 issues? Do you guys have regrets yet?
No.
No, this is fun. Right.
No, this is great.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I feel like next week we're going to have a flat butt song. Please call in.
Hashtag pancake butt.
Pancake butt. Yes. I want it for breakfast.
Yeah, that's going at the end of the show.